that are not.
Okay, we're going to call the regular public safety committee meeting of Newcastle County Council to order. With us this afternoon is President Bullock, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Powers, Council President Pro Tem. Holland. Yeah, well, I was kind of adding some things there and lost sight of where I was. But we have Councilman Smiley, Councilman Cartier, Councilwoman Diller, Councilman Retta, and Karen Barlow is my legislative aide, and she will be taking both voice and recorded minutes of the meeting. What's your pleasure with the minutes of the previous meeting?
Motion to approve.
Motion made.
Second.
And seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Okay, first on the agenda is ordinance 13-083. Amend the FY 2014 approved operating budget. Revise public safety staffing. Add 5 police officer positions to the partially funded, to be partially funded through the 2013 Community Oriented Policing Services COPS hiring program. We have Colonel Setting and several representatives, in addition to our Director of Public Safety, Joe Bryant, in attendance. And rather than, just read, what I'd like to do is ask Colonel Setting just for a brief comment on this. This is something that our police department has participated in the past, and it's worked very well for this county. And once again, it shows the creativity and the work that's done on the part of our grant writing within the police department. Colonel Setting.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'd be remiss if I didn't start by thanking our grant writer because these grants are getting tougher and tougher to get. We all know the simple truth is we're not able to grow the county police department with county dollars, although we desperately are in need of additional officers. This program offers us the ability to grow the agency, even if it's just by small 5 officers. It gives us an opportunity to grow the agency in these small increments at a much reduced cost to Newcastle County. It's an opportunity for us to hit an authorized strength of 375. We saw what happened when you let the attrition rate go and what can happen to this county and what can happen to this agency. And I don't think I need to remind anybody about the fact that we buried a hero that wore this uniform and this badge not all that long ago. And I think attrition plays its part in that. We have to be very careful in the future. The county is extremely large. We're giving police service to over 500,000 people with 370 county police officers. And when you take into consideration the amount of those officers that are in the academy or being trained, we're really out there running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with about, on average, 300 officers by the time you redact out, again, academies, FTO periods, training periods, and everything else. And that's a difficult thing to do. And we cover 420 plus square miles very, very efficiently. We are not asking for a mass increase, but we would ask council to support the fact that we are tapping into federal money to increase the agency by 5.
And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the total funding that will come to the department and the county through the grant is $625,000.
I won't lie to you, sir. I'm trying to pull it up on phone right now. But
I'm reading. It's over a three-year period. Laurie's nodding her head yes.
Yes, there you go.
So $625,000 towards the addition of 5 police officers through the federal COPS program. Questions from council? Councilman Smiley.
Yeah, I have a few of them. Right?
Yes, sir.
First off, before anything gets misunderstood, I support what we're doing.
Okay.
So we're going to increase our staffing level to 375.
Yes, sir.
Where would the officers come from that will get this? I mean, we're well into FY14 already. Are these going to be cadets that are going to be going on the street?
Well, as you know, as we've discussed in the past, Councilman, we needed to start setting a particular month when we have an actual academy. This running around and gathering an academy together at the last minute is a bad business model.
Right.
So now what our plan is to run an academy every October, no matter if we're down 5 officers or we're down 50. So you won't see these officers in play until October of 2014. So I'm not sure if that answers.
Okay. No, that does answer it. And we will maintain, we under the grant, we're required to maintain the officers beyond, 3 years beyond the end of the grant, or 1 year beyond?
One
year beyond the end of the grant. So at that time, through attrition or additional funding is where we would go. Okay.
Yes, sir.
No, good deal. Thank you.
Anything additional?
Any other questions from council? Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief, I believe we've had COPS funds before.
Yes.
Passed. Just kind of help me to understand how this works, because we've gotten the COPS grants before, then they're good for maybe 3 years, whatever the case may be. Then we get additional COPS grants. And at some point, I guess, the operating budget picks up when the COPS grants cut off. Had the COPS grants been, have they ended at some point for this to occur? And how does this particular grant that's going to take effect with this ordinance fit into the overall scheme of things? In terms of financial, how are we making this work? Because I know we've done these COPS grants before. We bring on X number of police officers. At some point, the grant is no longer
expires, sir.
Right. It's not funded. Right.
The short answer, sir, is someday we would absorb the cost.
We will continue to absorb, and this will just continue to help us to bring them on for a period of use.
And it certainly would put some money in our pocket. If we had to do it the traditional way, that would be
right.
Me standing in front of council saying we need more officers, and no one wants to hear that. But
right.
This is an opportunity to do both, to increase the size of the agency and have it partially paid for by the federal government. But the short answer to your question is eventually. The county would have to absorb the cost of those officers or reduce those positions
right.
through attrition.
Has there ever been a time when we were without the COPS, in recent history, without COPS funding at all? Or is this a continuing kind of a, when the feds do the COPS grant, say, for this particular grant for the next 3 years, do you think there's an opportunity there another be another COPS grant before this expires?
Yes.
Yes, because what they do, Joe Dudzinski, Public Safety Fiscal, what they do is the federal government will appropriate money into the COPS office each
mm-hmm.
year for what they call COPS hiring. So there's a possibility in fiscal 14 they could put in X millions of dollars, and we could make applications for additional officers under that funding.
I think it's a great program. I just want to have a better understanding of how, because I've seen it before, and I don't know when the grant expires and when we actually kick in with the operating funds or the grants, this grant, and now understanding that this possibility we may get another COPS grant before this particular grant runs out. Is that
correct?
Probability?
I mean, we could put in for it, but
right.
the amount of
there's no guarantee.
No,
but.
And the turnaround time on it is extensive. And what the team had to do in writing this grant was be very creative, because typically this type of money is sucked up by other agencies
right.
that can show higher homicides, higher gangs. But our argument is always the same, that we're reducing all that stuff through better policing and technology. And I actually feel, and I think the grant writer will agree with this, we had to do some creative writing just to get them to understand it costs the exact same amount of money to stop the bodies from dropping as it does to clean them up.
Thank you.
Councilor Smiley.
And I know I'm being redundant, but I just want to acknowledge, thank you. You know, great job on the grant. I'm pleased to see it. I was never more frustrated than several years ago when I sat here and found out we missed a federal grant because you solved too many of the crimes that come before it. And quite honestly, it's the most asinine logic I've ever heard in my life. You're solving the crime so you don't get the money so you can keep it up. Give it to the ones that aren't solving the crime with the hopes that they can figure out how to do it. So, good job and glad to see it.
Any other questions, Council? Colonel, we want to thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate council's support.
You okay?
We haven't voted yet.
All right, moving on to Resolution 13-246. Under my introduction, amend the Newcastle County Maldy Jurisdictional All-Hazard Mitigation Plan, and we'll move to Dave Carpenter, our emergency manager.
Thank you,
mm-hmm.
Council Bill. I'll be very brief. This is, as you know, every 5 years we've been back before you before to present the all-hazard mitigation plan, which covers mitigation measures. It's a FEMA requirement, and we're required to update that plan every 5 years, which is coming up next year in 2014 for the plan to be adopted by early 2015 by FEMA. This amendment is coming before you mainly driven by the fact that when we went through the mitigation measures during a recent grant process, we found that all the mitigation actions in there pretty much covered everything that we wanted to put in for, except for elevating homes. And so specifically, we had to write this mitigation action and have it come before you for adoption to add that to the plan. And the reason being is because we've embarked upon submitting an application through DEMA to FEMA for a hazard mitigation grant to elevate 10 homes in the Bayview Beach community down south. Urged by the homeowners down there and presented to us that we came up with a solution for them where they are actually paying the cost share of the elevation for the grant. So the 25% share will be borne by them. And this mitigation action just supports that effort in the plan because that's one of the requirements for FEMA. In addition, it goes forward by identifying some other potential communities and areas that would potentially be elevated in the future so that it's included for future action.
I think this, once again, when we look at our public safety department, our emergency preparedness manager and staff, Councilman Powers, I appreciate his involvement in this. We work very closely and sometimes we cross boundary lines, but when it comes to residents and citizens in the county, there really aren't any boundary lines. We're here all to work together. But Dave, I want to applaud you for this this initiative. I think that, as I began to say, is a lot of times our emergency preparedness doesn't get as much attention because maybe a smaller group of people are not as much activity. But I think it's a very intricate and important part of our public safety department, and the director and yourself and your team deserve a lot of credit.
Thank you, Councilman. Appreciate it.
Councilman Smiley.
Yeah. Did you say there were some communities listed in here?
Within that new action.
Not within this.
Right, not within that. Actually, within that, we didn't include the next five or six pages that include all the municipalities. Obviously, it's our plan is multi-jurisdictional. The reason it's multi-jurisdictional is we include the other municipalities within our plan.
Okay, good.
The incorporated areas are covered in the plan. We just provided you the ones for the unincorporated areas.
You just piqued my interest because I know the Ross Heights should have been built as a high-rise community.
and that's the specific mitigation action. We'll cover that in the future.
Okay. So, thank you.
Yep. So there's potential there for you guys to get.
Any further questions? Okay. Dave, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You need to elevate homes there.
Okay, next on the agenda, and before I call Chief Sutton forward, I'd like to just preface with remarks that we've talked in great detail, great length, during several land use committee meetings under the chairmanship of Joe Retta. Councilman Retta had introduced an ordinance before on residential sprinklers. That is actually on hold for future review and future presentation. Councilman Retta has worked very closely with our land use department, along with various utility contractors, as well as our emergency services, our fire departments, in committee form to take a look further into residential sprinklers. So today, Chief Sutton will appear before us on behalf of our volunteer firefighters to kind of reinforce and give us an update on the work that's been done and where we are and where we're going forward with the proposal residential fire sprinklers. Chief Sutton.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. We wanted to keep this a little more low-key than last time. So with me today, the only ones are Chief Bailey from Middletown, Chief Rudd from Aetna of Newark, and Chief Good has asked to participate in this with us. I have a handout for everybody that explains what has been updated and where we are at the present time that you can look at on your own.
While you're doing that, Chief, just want to recognize Councilman Weiner has stepped out of the room, but he will be back, and Councilman Tackett. Councilman Weiner is
there.
I didn't see you there, but both councilmen have been in attendance during the previous presentation. I just wanted that made for the record.
Thank you.
Chief?
I also have a CD, the Goodwill of Newcastle at their open house 2 weeks ago. Did a demonstration on a room fully involved without sprinklers and a room that had sprinklers in it. Unfortunately, since we work on a budget, we only have 7 copies. So if you'll share them amongst yourselves, and I think it'll be enlightening. The yellow tab in the handout is your resolution, 11088. And we agree with you 100%. We feel that the residential sprinklers should be a statewide initiative. And as you can see, the orange tab, I went to the Delaware State Fire Prevention Commission, and my letter to them is there, and I appeared before them just as I am now. Their answer is the orange tab. For those of you that might not know, the State Fire Prevention Commission is made up of 13 people. I'm sorry. That's correct. 13 members. 6 are in the fire service, 6 from industry, and they meet at past president of the DVFA, the Delaware Firefighters Association. All are appointed by the governor. They are in charge of the 2 divisions of the state government, which are the Delaware State Fire School and the Delaware State Fire Marshal's Office. And at every meeting, they have a deputy from the Attorney General's office that advises them on the opinions that they write. And his name is Andrew Kerber. And he was the one who penned their response along with the chairman of that committee. What has transpired since 2011 when your resolution took place? The Land Use Department facilitated through George Haggerty joint meetings between the Fire Service, the Home Builders Association, sprinkler contractor representatives, Water Infrastructure, Public Service Commission, and Land Use. Chief Rudd and myself attended those meetings, and I don't know if you've been given a minutes of those meetings or just what transpired. Many of the questions that we all had in the beginning have been answered. And after those meetings, it was suggested that the Home Builders Association and the Fire Service get together and try to come to a compromise on the issue of residential sprinklers. We did that. We approached Kevin Whitaker, which is one of their representatives, and arranged a luncheon that Chief Bailey and I attended, along with Rich Julian. Bottom line was, after lunch was over, their answer was, we're not interested in a compromise, we don't think we need to make a compromise, and we're not going to compromise. The fire service is always steadfast in their opinion that this is a public safety issue for the firefighters and for the residents of Newcastle County. So, some of the questions that were asked, most recently, you all got an email, I believe, from the Newcastle County Fire Chiefs Association supporting this. And Councilman Weiner asked about a phase-in period. The fire service approached the Home Builders Association, and it is still our stance that we feel a reasonable phase-in time is June of 2014 for townhouses and duplexes, and June of 2015 for single-family residences. Another question, I saved my emails, from Councilman Tackett back in June of 11 about the statewide sprinklers, which we've already told you we agree with 100%, and about Councilman Tackett's proposal to put drywall underneath the first floor joists. Well, that's now in the 2012 code, along with sprinklers that's been in the code since 2009. So if you look at 2014 and 2015, in reality, and the home builders know this because they work with those codes, that is a 5 to 6 year phase-in period. So the Habitat for Humanity question that came up, Tyco Industries or Tyco Suppliers, I don't know what the last part of their name is, has informed the Land Use Department and the Habitat for Humanity that any home they build, they will supply the materials for free. And in these last 2 years, I've been to a seminar in Chicago that was held by the National Fire Protection Association. And one of the things that some of the other jurisdictions do is they use the vocational schools
to work under the license of the plumber or sprinkler installer to do this. So that, and they specifically mentioned that they do that with Habitat for Humanity. So, oh, and I do have one other. Councilman Powers and I talked about the farms and the wells, and I went out and got some help, and they call it a home hydrant system. It's a polyurethane tank. It goes in your basement. It holds the 260 to 300 gallons of water, which is what a 13D system requires. 16 gallons a minute from two sprinkler heads for 10 minutes. That's 320 gallons. The price of that is $1,135. I understand his position 100%. I just don't own a farm. So,
Councilman Powers.
I represent most of the rural area.
Yes, you do.
And I have two problems, and I got a lot of constituents that have been calling me on this, because I think somebody's pushing out that they're doing it already by the county. And I still go back, you'd be better off having a better alarm system. I can tell you this right now, and Townsend's a good fire company, but how long is it going to take to get to my house?
I understand.
No, how long will it?
I don't know where you live, sir.
I live right on the state line. It's going to take you at least 15, 20 minutes. That means everybody's got to be in that truck to leave right there.
Okay.
But I've only lived there most of my life. Most of the time, the house out our way, a lot of times they burn. I mean, there's, you know, hell, Galena might get there quicker than might be in Middletown. Depends whoever has somebody in a truck, has anybody near there. It could be Clayton or Smyrna, but this is what, just the tank itself? Now, are they going to have to put another well?
Not once they fill that tank that I'm aware of.
What I'm hearing with what Marilyn's saying is they're going to need another well just to supply that.
I can't.
So if you add that cost, you got another whole different well putting in there. So there's too many unanswered questions, because I've heard the cost costing up to $10,000 more, and you're giving me this. I don't know who get. When I did it, I went and asked somebody from a sprinkler company to tell me how much it's going to cost to put it in my house. And at the time, somebody said $3,000 to $5,000, and it was double that.
If you watch this video,
I'm going to tell you, it's going to show. I agree, but I'm telling you right now, your guys ain't going to be out there. It's going to be the people living there. And the quickest thing to get somebody out is to have a big enough system that they can hear. Because you're I'm a quarter mile away from my next house.
We're not saying to eliminate anything. This is not in lieu of, this is included.
We need to know what the real cost is going to be. What I also heard is, what is the insurance companies going to do if these lines break? Are they insuring the house? I've heard through some of the insurance companies they're not going to insure.
It's my understanding it's the same as if a water pipe breaks in your house right now.
I understand, but if you ever deal with insurance companies, they go, we need to find this out before it ever goes any further. Okay.
And let me kind of set the tone of this again, that we would like very much this afternoon, this is the Public Safety Committee, and our fire service leadership is coming before us to give us an update on residential sprinklers, their initiative. It will take form when it does, as far as proceeding under the land use and land use per se, as far as our universal codes and things. Once that proceeds, then we'll get into probably a lot more debate as far as, you know, the actual ordinance and where we go in the future. But I think the fact remains that residential sprinklers and sprinklers in general save lives, save property. And whether you're talking at, you know, a 15, 20 minute response of apparatus from a station to get there, normally within the first minute or two of sprinkler activation, the fire has at least been confined to that area, and in many cases actually been extinguished. So there's a lot of benefits of sprinklers. And I don't think this afternoon we're going to get into a debate, nor do we want to get into a debate of the full-blown sprinkler legislation. However, with that being said, All one has to do is go back the last year or two. We all get the newspaper. We all see what happens in our county. No one else's county but ours. And we've seen multi-family dwellings, especially townhouses, where fire has extended into several buildings and jeopardized not only the lives of the people that live there, but the firefighters that are responding. So this is a topic that's going to have to be thoroughly discussed. There's going to have to be a lot of information presented. And I think that what the chief's intent today and the chief's committee today representing the fire service was to try to at least bring this back to the table for some further information and discussion. Councilman Smiley.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for bringing it. I appreciate it. I would hope when it does come forward, we do have some more defined costs than we had before as far as the water companies and everyone else. That being said, I went to the Goodwill Fire Company only because of the demonstration that was being put out. That's why I cut that out of all the Easter parades and or Halloween parades, that's how good I am, that were going on that I had to be at. You really need to watch this. It was an eye-opener for me. I mean, it really was. I mean, I knew that they would do well, but it was really informative to watch the two at the same time. And I'll give kudos. William Penn actually built one of the houses for them. But, yeah, it's very informative. I think it's definitely worth watching to push the can down the road a little more as to the statewide idea. Speak with whoever you have to speak with or whatever. If you're interested in putting on a brief presentation, whatever, to the Delaware Association of Counties, which is all three counties, we meet in Dover. If you're interested in that, I would be willing, any one of us can, but I would be willing to ask Ms. Gardner, who is actually the secretary for Delaware Association of Counties, and she's a clerk of our council, to place that on an agenda. And that would be distributed early enough to the council and levy court members of all three counties for that meeting, if you'd be interested in something like that. I don't know if you haven't already been to the levy courts and everything, but if you wanted to get the group together as a whole, whoever comes up, I'd be willing to get that put on the agenda. Just let us know what you want to do.
No, we have not, but thank you for your offer, and I will contact the Delaware Volunteer Firefighters Association about that.
And just contact me or contact Betsy directly. I'll make sure she knows that I support it. And, you know, you just need a council person, you know, to request it go on the agenda. That's all.
Councilman Cartier, then Councilman Tackett.
Thank you. I always take the role of educating myself on public policy issues very seriously, and I want to commend the Volunteer Association for all your involvement, advocacy, and educational efforts on behalf of residential sprinklers. You know, I've followed your educational effort very closely, and I want to tell you, it is eye-opening, the need for residential fire sprinklers. And on the practical level, two examples that I can point out. I got to witness the Ballymead fire disaster, which is a subdivision now in Councilman Weiner's district, where it's a townhome development made of light construction materials, which we had a total of destruction of one townhouse, destruction of adjacent townhouses, just an unbelievable amount of fire damage. Fortunately, no loss of life or loss of personnel in the Volunteer Claymont Fire Company. But when you see the scale of destruction that can happen, and this was particularly exacerbated by wind, it just kind of brings you up short. And again, those townhomes had no sprinklers in them. And it was, you know, just like I said, it looked like a war zone after the fire was over. And the second thing I'd like to point out in the practical vein, currently, right now, in Darley Green and Claymont, those townhomes are under development and are selling well. They're affordably priced and they're sprinklered. So I'm watching that that thing go underway, and that's a special limited type of an example that was something that was mandated by the state fire marshal in that particular subdivision. And people seem to be accepting that, no problem, and moving forward with affordable product, quality affordable product. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Tackett, then Councilman Weiner.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, appreciate the passion of the fire company and understand, you know, obviously there's arguments on both sides of the spectrum that we're going to hear, and there's also going to be faced with the periphery of smorgasbord of questions, you know, obviously, again. Actually, I want to direct my comments to the chair. Please, you know, thank you for your well-crafted, elegant words, you know, but as one half of the Land Use Committee, any controversial issues that you would feel compelled to take on in your committee, please, you know, don't do it.
You won't be chair, not you.
I know. You and Chrissy.
Mr. Co-Chairman, we'd be more than glad to take this one on. Councilman Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to support sprinklers in multifamily apartments. I have reservations, which I expressed before, in single-family residential. I would like to see exploration of a phase-in, given the tentative state of our Home Builders Association, our tentative economic recovery. I'd also like to see a specific question answered, and that is, if someone's putting a small addition on their home, does that mean their entire home has to be retrofitted with sprinklers? Do you have the answer to that question?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, earlier I said that June of 2014 was what the fire service was discussing about townhouses and duplexes, and June of 2015 for single family residents. Let me see, I've got it written here for my notes just for, because of your email to the Secretary of the Chiefs Association. Concerning your email raising questions about a phase-in time frame, which I just told you, and the last, I have not heard nor participated in any meetings or conversations about remodeled homes. This is strictly new homes.
So, your answer?
As far as yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I've asked this question, and I really want to get it clear because it certainly would affect the position that I take representing my constituency, and I think others might share my concern as well. And the other suggestion I have is the state license groups homes. You know, they have a constitutional right to go anywhere in Newcastle County. That's an issue regardless of your letter interpreting Title 16, saying that only the counties can make decisions. Group homes, certainly a condition of the state licensing, should be sprinkling. And the sprinklers. And the reason why I raise that is, sir, if you take a look at 123 Prospect near where you live and I live, it was gutted. No sprinklers. And that's something certainly clear within the state jurisdiction.
I am not familiar with that. The only thing I furnished you was the State Fire Prevention Commission's opinion.
Right. I understand. And I'm going to take a look at that, whether or not that opinion is, I just want to take a second look at it. But setting that aside, it's clear and unequivocal that state-licensed grouped homes can be sprinklered now, where you have people that, you know, they might be smokers, they're unrelated to each other. I think the state has a moral duty and certainly legal authority to require sprinklers there. And I had a house in my council district just burned down, and it was on a heavy-winded day. And thank God we had the Tallyville Fire Company there, because the job they did was great. It could have easily have extended that fire to the houses in Blue Rock Manor right around it. And I'm asking you to go back to your friends in the state and ask them to add to group home licenses a requirement they be sprinklers, and you can do that now.
We have the right man sitting here.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chief. Just before we go any further, just want to recognize also when Chief Sutton mentioned that there are some others here who have actively served on a committee and are partners in the Fire and Emergency Services. But Chief Rudd from Aetna Hose, Hook and Ladder is also with us today. Chief Frank Bailey from the Volunteer Hose Fire Company of Middletown. And we have our good friend from the City of Wilmington Fire Department, Chief Good. Chief, anything further?
No, sir.
Councilman Holland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We probably went over this before in the first iteration of debates and discussion, but and you said it again here this afternoon, there's a different startup time for townhouses versus single family. What's the logic for that again, please?
The townhouses have the most life hazard because there's they're connected, interconnected, such as Councilman Cartier talked about. And I would like to interject here that one sprinkler head would have put that fire out at the incipient stage. That's what we have to understand. Sprinklers work in the incipient stage, put the fires out before they get big. The biggest townhouses and apartment complexes are where the largest life hazard is, and single-family residences. As Mr. Powers has said, and others here, it needs to be defined, which I think was the objective of the meeting facilitated by the Land Use Committee, and that's the fire service. We're trying to be open about a phase-in process and amicable about it. It seems to be a one-sided attempt with the Home Builders Association. I have nothing else. I can't explain it like I'd like to, but basically, Frank and I wasted our time.
I'm at a loss with that statement. But it just seems to me, and not being a fire expert or in the service of fire prevention and all of that, it just seems to me that if there's a hazard, and I would agree that there's a more probability if the townhomes are connected, there are townhomes that are considered duplexes, etc. But if the idea is to save a life, it just seems to me that it should be, the effort should be equal, whether you live in a townhouse or whether you live in a mansion. If this is the best thing to save a life, it just seems to me that it's, I don't understand the logic of saying we'll start with townhouses or with any other house. We start where people live. It just seems to me that would be the practical approach as opposed to,
I agree with you 100%. We're just trying to reach a compromise to get it started, because if we don't start, we won't get to finish.
Yeah. But it seems that it's more political than it is about saving lives. If there's someone who's saying that, well, let's do the townhomes first and put off doing the single family, it seems more of a political movement than it is a safety movement.
It's certainly not political on the Fire Service end.
But on somebody's end.
You said that.
I did.
Good observation.
That's problematic for me.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Thank you. I've been mentioning this at Civic Association meetings that I'm going to, since it came up the last time and we had 6-hour-long committee meetings with much discussion. And some of the comments that I've been getting are that prospective homeowners would like to see this as an option offered on every home, but allowing them to make the decisions themselves. And some of that comes with the economy and the base price of a house and options that they always choose going into a house, things that are priorities to them. They are telling me that they're extremely tired of government ruling everything in their life. And of course, this has escalated in the last month. They're concerned about the water companies and what the water companies are going to charge. If a second line has to go in and the water company has to guarantee that the pressure is there, and that means that there can be less houses or less buildings, units built within that area because there is only a certain capacity that a water company can offer. So is the water company, do they, if the sprinklers are in and they have to have a double line and they have to maintain that pressure at all times, they have to make up that money someplace. If it's not in units, then they're going to double up on the base costs going into one single unit. So those are just, you know, some of the things that I'm hearing. People tend to think that it might be okay in townhouses because you're affected by somebody else. Some of them think that we should look at better building materials that are not so flammable. People from the fire company have said to me that we have less fires now because of some of the better materials that we're using, but when we have them, they're worse. So these are just, you know, just to give you an idea of some of the things that are going on out there. But from the consumer perspective, there is definitely a cost issue. And as Councilman Powers mentioned, there is the concern about, if I add a family room onto my house, do I need to retrofit my whole house? If I convert my garage into a utility room, do I have to then go back? Can I put it in that new improved section of the house, or do I have to go back at a cost of $10,000 to $12,000, $15,000, what is in retrofit the entire house? And then, of course, we get into the double line again, and we go back through the cost of the water companies. So those are the things that, I guess, when this discussion does come up, I would like true numbers. I mean, I totally understand. I think you remember from last time, you know, I have this fear of water. I know things from water can dry out, but I have been through some horrendous water issues in homes that I've lived in. I know that burning will never bring anything back. It can't be recreated. I know that there's a life issue that goes along with this, and I fully understand that. But I think that there's a lot of things that we, even, you know, in these massive discussions that we've had, we have not gotten concrete answers on some of the questions that have been brought up.
I'm a remiss here because I have those answers.
But I don't.
And wait a minute. And so does anybody that attended those meetings that the county facilitated for a year.
No, we do not have the water. We don't know what United's going to do. We don't know what Artesian's going to do. We don't know what the city of Wilmington is going to do, which goes not just the city, but they're a water company. They go out into the Brandywine 100 area. Chief. We do not have anything definitive on how that's going to be structured within each one of these units being built. And our constituents have these concerns.
And Council, I understand that.
Chief, if you could, just for a half second, not to interrupt you, but I believe that Councilman Retta could shed some light on some of the questions that you've asked and things about what the committee's been working on. I think, Chief, you did answer the question on the part of the fire service that the fire service is not looking for retroactive retrofits or additions. It would be new dwellings, new townhouses, things of that nature, correct?
Absolutely.
New construction.
Yes.
So, Councilman Rudd, if you would.
Okay. Thank you. Well, some of the questions you've asked about the double line, you don't need a double line. You build 1-inch line based on 2,000 to 2,500 square foot home. And it would be a single meter. And then it'd have a diverter in there after the meter, which goes to, one goes to the sprinkler and one goes to domestic. Once the sprinkler gets filled, the lines get filled, the pressure stays in there. There's no more pressure, there's no more water running unless it goes through your domestic. And that's where the diverter comes in. It stops the water from going into the sprinkler, which you're not going to be using. It can't go anymore because it's stopped. The cost on that is a little more than a regular domestic single line domestic water line going into your house, as in through your house, because you have a diverter going in and you have a double line. That's where you pay the extra cost for the sprinkler.
But what is the extra cost?
The extra cost goes anywhere nationwide from anywhere from $1.50 to $2.25
a month
square foot.
Oh,
a month? No, the month.
No, I'm talking about the water company bill.
The water company bill is down now compared to what it was before, because United and all three of the companies, United Tidewater and Artesian, have been at different meetings with George Haggerty, and I believe the Fire Association was there also, and they had meetings on this, and the bill has come down. The price of the water has come down.
So when you quoted me that so much per square foot, you're talking construction cost?
Construction cost, which is where they put the pipes in and the sprinkler heads.
Okay.
The square foot. So if you got anywhere from 2,000 to 2,500 square foot.
So we have guarantees from all of the water companies that they will not do an extra base.
No, there's no extra line. There's no line going in.
and you're based on what you use, and that is basically your domestic water. Because once it's filled, you're not filling the pipes anymore. You can't fill them anymore. And your pressure's there until they go off.
Okay. Testing,
right.
We need to, I mean, how often do these need to be tested?
Fire service.
At the present time, there is no testing for single-family residence sprinkler systems because it's non-existent. And the understanding I had, if they were implemented, they would be something that the homeowner could do themselves. It's no more than keeping a maintenance on your water that comes into your house, your spigots, your washers, things of that nature. It's not a unique system. And the 13D in your house is not unique.
And okay, I believe,
but some of those, I mean, those are the questions that I'm getting from constituents, because they're getting different answers than what you guys are giving me here.
Well, I don't know where they're getting them.
Well, I don't.
Because they're not getting them from me, and they're not getting them from the fire service. And the other part is, too, is that the insurance companies, there was only one insurance company, and I believe I mentioned this twice the last marathon meetings we had. It was Nationwide. The other ones, State Farm is given the most, which is anywhere from 5% to 12% discount a year. That's for having sprinklers in your house.
Okay.
Because it's a lot cheaper.
I think that, Chief, you can kind of get the picture pretty much as to very similar questions as what has come up in the very beginning, and going to be repetitive questions that some will be able to be addressed and accepted, and maybe there will be some that, no matter how much you address it, may never be accepted. But the fact of the matter is that this is a matter that has been brought back before the Public Safety Committee by our volunteer fire service. There's a continued interest and initiative to try to get residential sprinklers implemented here in New Castle County, Delaware. And I think that in future land use meetings, as this thing comes back before the council in committee and eventually for a vote, that many of these questions that are generated today, some have been answered, some have not, need a little bit further research and everything. But, you know, with that, Councilman Smiley.
Okay, I know you want to end this, and I'm just going to say, for those involved in trying to create the path forward, and I'll make an analogy. We're all hearing from people who were going to be able to keep their health insurance, and they're getting letters that it's canceled because they were verbally told. So all I'm going to say is, if a water company says A, B, and C is true, then I want to see A, B, and C on that water company's letterhead. If an insurance company says A, B, and C is true, then I want to see A, B, and C on an insurance company's letterhead. If they're willing to tell somebody on the phone this is what we're going to do, then they ought to be willing to put it in print with someone in authority's signature on it, so we can have that as part of a packet when we eventually move to the legislation.
Yeah,
that's all.
Well agreed, and I think that there's been several committee meetings. You know, there should be some documentation and also some information provided as you're requesting on letterheads that'll support what we're going to work on as far as legislation. Councilman Weiner?
Yeah, just a quick point. I don't know whether my questions can get resolved or not, but phasing in simply by putting it to 2015 may not be the answer for the home builders industry, where we're behind the A-curve in Delaware, and they said, the eight ball, I think the expression is, and they said it'll be 2017 before the market returns nationwide. It may be longer here. That's just one factor I've got to consider, as well as the safety factors, and I've got to weigh them all.
Good. That's your job.
Yep, that's my job.
I understand.
Yep.
I hope you understand.
Right.
Yes.
My job is the protection of
absolutely
the firefighters and the residents.
I'm just trying to be upfront with the factors I've got to weigh.
And I hope you look at the pamphlet, and I hope you look at this video.
Yeah, I'd rather get that digitally rather than have it an object.
Well, you know.
And in the meantime, it is also the job of everyone sitting here as elected officials to represent the public safety and life safety of every citizen in this county. And we have our fire department here today once again bringing this initiative back forward to us. So no decisions are ever easy. But at the end of the day, if we do what's best for our firefighters, for the citizens of this county, and try to work in concert with the home builders. And it's very saddening to hear that over the last year, there is no spirit of cooperation. And if that, in fact, is the case, the message needs to be sent loud and clear that when this council goes to vote, we're going to be looking at the spirit of cooperation in the best interest of the people we all serve, including the home builders. Any other questions from council?
I guess I can't come to a short meeting, Bill. I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right. Yeah. I'm going to open it up to public comment, but I'm only going to open it up for some very brief comment. I do not and will not entertain a debate or a presentation. We've got other items on the agenda that will carry this meeting probably to at least 4:30. So with that, is there any public comment on this particular presentation today from the fire service? Yes, sir. Please stand up, identify yourself.
Good afternoon. My name is Howard Fortunato, and I am the Executive Vice President of the Home Builders Association of Delaware. I'll be very, very brief. I do understand that the ordinance is being, is being crafted at this point. We certainly want to be, because I want to directly address your last comments. We want to be a part of this. I would certainly like Mr. Whitaker, who could not be here today, who had the meeting with Chief Sutton. We certainly appreciate everything that you all do. I can't speak for Kevin, but I think that we do want to be a part of the discussions, and I think there's been a lot of stuff that's come up today in terms of different various aspects, and we're here and we'll be a part of this.
I don't think that we can ask for any more of that. At the end of the day, we have to have input from everyone. And the ultimate decision lies in this legislative branch. Okay, wraps that one up. Any other questions? Comment? Okay. Moving on to Delaware Animal Control update. It had been a while since, quite a while, since we had received kind of an update on animal control here in New Castle County. And so what we've done today, and there's been significant changes at the Kent County SPCA, Kevin Uselton, Executive Director of Kent County SPCA. We have Sergeant Hallett, Sergeant Barnes here today. And so today, for Council's benefit, would to kind of bring us forward as to there's been significant changes at the Kent County SPCA, kind of an update, maybe a little bit of background statistics over the past several months, and then any questions that council or the public may have.
Good afternoon, Council. Welcome. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for having us here. We have been through a lot of changes in the last, I've been at the SPCA for almost 2 years now, so there have been a lot of changes. The biggest change that we just announced is that we're changing our name from just the Kent County SPCA. We're now becoming the First State Animal Center and SPCA to kind of reflect that we do statewide initiatives for animals. We kind of think that our motto is protecting animals from people and protecting people from animals. So some of the issues that I've discovered as our state revolves around animal welfare, we have a new Office of Animal Welfare, which is starting up on a state level to kind of help. We ask the state to take back dog control and make officers statewide dog control officers. They haven't done that as of yet. We're still pushing for that initiative because we understand that this was pushed down onto the counties several years ago in 2006.
Without funding.
We were funding it before that anyway.
So part of that, no resources for animals. And the biggest resource that I'm sure that you're hearing complaints about is that there's no place for cats. The Office of Animal Welfare only talked about feral cats, but did not talk about cats in general. So I think that as we move into public safety, The biggest issue is that we have to protect our citizens from cats are residents of our county, as well as other animals, wildlife, livestock, and those kinds of initiatives need to be addressed. Right now, our state only talks about dog control, so if we can, you know, move past just dogs and talk about animals, that would be awesome. I think that not having resources for unwanted animals, as we move towards a no-kill state, the door is shut for unwanted animals. And so what that does is you'll see in our statistics that it's increasing our pickup of contained strays because people are lying to us saying, I have a stray dog that I can't keep anymore. When we scan it and find a microchip, it traces back to them. So then we have a court case involved. So it's no longer just a simple pick up the dog, try to find its owner and give it back. Or if we can't find the owner, give it to a new family. It's very complicated. As well, there are more animals at large because people are just dumping them out on the street because there's no place to take them. We also have an issue that animal shelters and rescues do not temperament test dogs that they adopt out. So family members are adopting dogs. They're becoming aggressive. So we answer more bite reports from those families and also more dog-on-dog attacks, which is not something that the SPCA currently covers. To remind you that we only have a contract for dog control. So I know that all of these other issues are about animals and animal welfare, and we interchange those things, but our contract with the county is just about dogs. The last point that I wanted to really bring up to you is that in reviewing our standards against national standards, we have animal control officers who work in an unsecured environment, which is dependent on animal contracts for animal control. Currently, we have contracts with three counties until the end of the year. Our officers work for low pay, low benefits, and we have outdated equipment. We currently, for Newcastle County, have 5 trucks which were purchased in 2007, which are still on the road and working today. So we're working very hard to update our equipment and so that we can do a better job for the residents.
Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. I think you have an impossible job to please everyone.
Yes.
So I tip my hat to you and thank you for the help that you provided. All of us, or at least I do, get calls for foxes, suspected coyotes, but mostly raccoons. And the best we can do is private contractors at this point is to advise them to go to private contractors. Do you maintain a list of contractors, or is there a database that we can refer them to for raccoons principally?
Sure. DENREC approves wildlife trappers. So we give out approved wildlife trappers because there are lots of unscrupulous people who trap a raccoon and take it in the bay and drown it, which is illegal. So DENREC is really the point contact for wildlife. If there is contact with a dog or a human, if there's wildlife contact with a human, then animal control will go out and trap the raccoon and then have the raccoon tested. So if there's human contact, we'll respond. If not, it's DENREC and it's a trapper that someone's going to have to pay for.
Thank you.
Council President Moore.
What is the level of dog fighting that you encounter?
So I just was talking. Dog fighting falls under cruelty. We've responded to 30 dog fighting complaints so far this year to date. Most dog fighting, thankfully, in Delaware is done by adolescents who are just trying to gain status within their neighborhoods. Dog fighting for paid has come into our county, not Newcastle County, but it come into Kent County and quickly been shuffled out. So we are working very diligently to make sure that we keep a handle on these types of issues so that people don't come to Delaware to start dog fighting rings.
Okay. Councilman Tackett.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, commend the First State Animal Center and SPCA. obviously, you know, anytime you want to reach deep down and invoke anybody's passions, you're going to find children and animals down there. I think the two times we packed out the council chambers was one when we dealt with pit bull legislation and one when we dealt with RV legislation. But How about on here about the Delaware licensing, the requirement? Are you, when you're going out to homes or checking dogs, are you doing anything about checking for the actual licensing of the animals?
Yes. So if you look at the third page, which is January through September 2013, this is our animal control complaints put together by Major Whipple, who has left us as of Friday. So that's why you get to me filling in for him. So you'll see that our license checks, we did 960 license checks, and rabies checks, we did 1,445. These are important key components. Licensing is a tax for dog owners to help pay for services that they are provided. So that's why licensing is the one source that Newcastle County gets for providing dog control services at the current state. I believe that the Office of Animal Welfare has an initiative to take that away from you, but currently that is still within your power to take those revenues. And so every dog that we encounter, we check for rabies and license for that. And rabies is higher because of the cat issue.
Now, when you talk about checks, how many of these proved to not have a license? Do you know that? Now, I tell you, Major Whipple was a great guy, even though he had a tattoo of a parrot. But
well, we didn't see it, so where was it?
On his arm.
Oh, okay.
I told him it should have been at least a dog, but it's a parrot.
I don't have a breakdown on the number of rabies certificates. In total, for Newcastle County Code citations, we wrote 215 year to date, and so that's from January until September. We wrote 75 citations for someone not having a rabies certificate.
But the citations you're writing wasn't accompanied by any fines, because it was my understanding there actually wasn't a fine. It was just more so an awareness. You had to make them aware they didn't have it, which they should have known.
No, a citation actually has a fine. The Newcastle County Code's $250.
So you
but
wrote
it's a Delaware State Code.
$250 fines to individuals? Did anybody get a call on that?
The licensing is $75.
Please, if you would, please stand and identify yourself. That's okay.
I'm sorry.
Welcome.
To
no, welcome.
This is my corrective.
More than welcome.
Yes.
Actually,
your
the licensing is a $50 fine. It's the adult at large, which is $250.
Oh, thank you.
So. Thank you, sir. Councilman Smiley?
Yeah, I just want to say, and I know you're aware of it, I reported it back to the administration. A couple of years ago, shortly after we got tasked with this, I took, and let me be clear because I have a reputation to protect, I took my wife's and my daughter's dogs up to a center up in North Wilmington where the Delaware Humane was running the rabies shot clinic. And Newcastle County was set up right next to the rabies table for the licensing. So after I got those two dogs vaccinated and the license, I sat there for a good hour. Nobody, but nobody in that hour went from the rabies table to the licensing table. They got the shots, they took their dogs, and they went back to their vehicle in an hour. I mean, it was packed. They were lined up. Not one went to the licensing table. They got the rabies shot, and the table was right there, well marked, everything else. Not a one during that hour when I waited and I reported that back. They're not doing it, which is why one of the things that was being proposed and discussed in the past administration, other than giving it all back to the state, is the two need to be coupled. Mm-hmm. The two need to couple. You don't walk away with the rabies tag unless you walk away with the licensing tag. No. They need to be coupled together. At least that way, whoever's responsible that's would right. get a little more revenue, because it's just not happening.
Director, I guess the question I have is, I think that looking at the resources you have, the equipment you have and everything, and the numbers of people you have, probably, holding your own, in my estimation. But I guess from a quality standpoint of service here in Newcastle County, because we're spending taxpayers' money for a service that folks expect, just like they do any other service the county government provides or contracts, are you in a position today with providing the entire state of Delaware with animal care and control to adequately provide Newcastle County with the service that we need?
We feel that we are. We lost some officers this year because of the contract renewal, and because of that, they didn't know if they were going to have a job, so some of them left. So we now are searching for new officers to complete. I gave you a copy of our current schedule so that you can see. There are some days when there are five officers. There are some days when there are three officers. This program is 24 hours a day. We're on the road from 6 a.m. until 11 p.m. So the officer, and after that, the officers are on call for emergencies. So they are providing the services and the resources. And you can see that year to date, we've answered 4,197 calls and requests for services.
Any other questions from council, members of council? Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Can I just say thank you for changing your name? I am so tired of trying to explain to people that you are not part of Kent County.
You're welcome. We appreciate it, too.
Open up for questions and public comment. Sir, please stand and identify yourself for the record.
How you doing? I'm Bill Wheatley from Newark, Delaware. And I have an issue with rabies/feral cats. I know it's an issue you folks don't like to hear about, but I'm going to put it out there. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for allowing me to speak. And I'm going to draw this correlation. On Sunday, November the 3rd, I was called to a site on Morris Lane in my community for help to rescue an endangered hawk that was captured in a trap. With just a few phone calls and a short period of time, assistance arrived from Newcastle County Police Department, Denver Wildlife Department, Delaware Bird Rescue, and Delaware Animal Control. The endangered species Cooper Hawk was removed from its captive situation and rescued. The individual responsible for that is now dealing with legal issues. By contrast, let me tell you my experience back on July 24th when I was confronted with a rabid feral cat that jumped in my window after my domestic cat, foaming at the mouth. I called 911. They referred me to SPCA. The SPCA referred me to the rabies hotline. Rabies hotline said they don't come get rabid cats or rabies animals, unless they're dead. Well, that don't do me no good. According to Delaware law, cats are wild animals and not subject to restrictions similar to those applied to dogs. The hotline deals only in dead animals. Department of Health and Human Services only ensure that persons bitten receive the necessary medical treatment. In desperation, I finally resorted to calling the offices of the county executive and the governor's office. Repeated calls to the county executive's office indicated they would look into the matter. As of today, they still haven't looked into the matter. I called the governor's office. The governor's office response was, don't call us, we'll call you. Meanwhile, a rabid feral cat was roaming the neighborhood, jeopardizing children, families, and other legitimate pets. In addition, other feral cats in its proximity could be infected and create an epidemic. No action has been taken yet. Citizens who own dogs are required to license the animal, keep it in restraint, and have it inoculated against rabies. Citizens who own cats have no legal requirements for such animals and can permit them to roam free with no restrictions. Furthermore, some groups support cat communities in our county, often resulting in the type of problem that I encounter, and no government law or agency has the jurisdiction over them. This has become an epidemic condition, and citizens don't need to be brushed off when they ask for help from their government agencies, as I was. Statistics confirm that more rabies are transmitted through feral cats than through wild animals such as raccoons, skunks, and foxes, and other animals that suburbanites encounter from time to time. Yet, no agency is responsible for resolution of the problem. Basically, the citizen is left on its own. Now, I stated the problem. Now, I have a solution. I've got a solution. Not only do I come up with the problem, I come up with a solution.
Thank you, sir.
Allow me to give you the solution. I know it's a little more difficult than what I wrote, but it's a solution, and it's easy to fix. And you guys sitting at this table can do it. How to fix the problem. In a situation like what happened to me, an emergency situation, allow the animal control department to be dispatched to that location for the purpose only to capture the rabid animal, cat, to prevent humans from being bitten, children, and other domestic animals from coming in contact with the infected animal to prevent it from turning into a public health epidemic. Thank you for your time. I hope your response is put an amendment to this policy to get these feral cats that have rabies to eliminate public safety and the quality of life for people in our community. Thank you very much.
First, we want to thank you for taking the time to come before the committee, Public Safety Committee, and bring this this matter to our attention. Should have said first, I want to thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. With that being brought out, as far as suspecting a rabid-type cat or any other type of rabid animal, what is the answer?
The answer is more resources.
Money.
So if you decide that you would like that to be a service for residents, all you have to do is add it to your contract.
Right.
Okay, but here's my question back to that as far as contractually. Is and we have folks here from our law department and from public safety. We have a problem today where if we have a rabid cat or other type of animal, it should not be that type of answer going back to any citizen in this county. There should be some immediate resolution to protect the life safety of our folks. So I guess what I'm looking at is that, you know, we can improve contracts, and if that needs to be added, certainly that's something that could be looked into. But right now, today, this date, and going forward, what happens when someone calls the 911 center, someone calls the SPCA, and says, this is the situation at hand? Will it take us having a child? Will it take us having an adult or anyone being seriously injured or contracting rabies? When we don't have one service that can go and either destroy or, and I don't think they destroy because I think you'd want to know whether it was rabid. What is our answer today?
There is no answer because nobody wants to pay for resources for people to be available to respond to emergencies involving cats. The SPCA mm-hmm. has asked to have resources to respond to emergencies involving cats or other animals that don't involve humans and have been told no. So we have fought many a battle to try to get resources for situations like this and have been unable to. Our contract is for dogs. As I said, if you want to add this to your contract, we would love to talk to you about it in detail.
Well, I guess from chair's prerogative, I would say that we'd be very foolhardy to not want some provision in our contract for animal care and control to not be able to protect our people from a rabid type animal. And I don't profess that we get into the whole entire cat situation and population, but I think when we have a situation where somebody is put at risk, then we should have some sort of a vehicle to get that done. Councilman Smiley, then we're going to go to Councilman
I'm just going to say,
then I'll come back to public.
I don't know if they would.
Mr. Chair, I have
I'm sorry, I apologize. We're going to go Councilman Weiner, Councilman Smiley, then Councilman Powers. Councilman Weiner.
Take that back.
Thank you. I really appreciate the First State Animal Center position. I know they've been as many other SPCAs across the country, asking for the resources, i.e. the money, and this agency can't be expected to do something where they don't have the resources, then they'd be violating their contract with us concerning dog control. So it's up to us, the elected people's representatives, to ask the executive branch of government to ask for different numbers for different levels of service, and then for the executive branch and legislative branch to do what we do and protect our public.
Thank you.
I would agree. Councilman Smiley?
Yeah, I'll just say, I don't know what, if they would have come out or not. I didn't hear the gentleman say he had called DENRAC.
Yes, now, I did.
I didn't hear him say that in the end, because that's, I'm just saying, that's who I called when my wife and grandson got chased in the house by a raccoon, and they did come out for that. But let's just say, years ago when the state had the animal control, there was a state legislator that actually drafted legislation to license cats, and they all but hung him on the House floor.
over the issue. And quite honestly, I've had it written on my board for 3 years. I finally erased it because I got tired of seeing Jim Boyle have spasms every time he walked by my door. But that's the only way you're going to do it, because let's be honest. This gentleman has a very good situation. But I can tell you right now, people in my district, because I've got a big cat problem, every time they're annoyed with a cat, looks like it's got rabies. It's chasing my Doberman around the front yard. You name it, they'll come up with it, and they'll be responding. We're losing at least a $500,000 a year now in dog control. You add that, I said at least.
I was going to say, you didn't see the
so
new contract.
So maybe we have to do Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays are dogs, and Tuesdays and Thursdays are cats. I don't know. But I appreciate it, but the answer is give it all back to the state.
Councilman Parrish?
Yeah, I have two questions, and they kind of been touched on a little bit from both of them. The first one, what would it cost to add the cat thing? Okay, and the second one is, I want to know what the cost is going to cost us as a no-kill state.
If you look at Austin, which is a city, which is the size of the state of Delaware, they're spending about $8 million on no-kill and are currently out of space for new animals coming in.
How big? We're not as big as that.
Not quite, but we're already spending about $5 million on animal welfare initiatives within the state with the current situation.
But that's all three counties?
That's all three counties.
What is our share of that?
You're almost at $1,990,000.
And our contract before was $800,000, so we're going up $1 million because of an unfunded mandate by the state.
It is.
That goes back to the cats. You're saying we need more resources for it. What is that going to cost us?
It will be adding more officers on a regular basis.
How many more would you say?
I would say at least two.
And how much will that cost us with a truck and everything?
That's about $100,000 off the top of my head.
For
two people.
Or 100 for two.
Right.
Is that capital investment or operating?
Operating.
What will it, because we don't, you said you got five trucks there. Seven, 6 years old.
We're working on a replacement.
How big are your trucks?
Our trucks are full size.
What size are pickup trucks?
Full size.
Yeah,
I would
agree.
1,500.
Yeah. Councilman Tackett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Obviously, the system's broke. I mean, in our committee meeting, we've sat here, we've already heard it, you know. They're down officers, they've lost them, there's no consistency. They have to have a dedicated source of funding in order to maintain an adequate office in there if they're going to have any vision at all of doing some kind of adequate animal control in Newcastle County, and that'll include public safety. Does not include dogs. I mean, it's extremely unfortunate that we have a constituent sitting here today talking about, I call this and this and this and this and this and, you know, I mean, that should never happen. You should make one call and it should have been handled, you know. I mean, and where do we get back to that? I mean, obviously, you know, we've got to get there at some point. You know, we can, you know, throw the money here at it, but the problem is, and I've already dealt with this, we're here at this level and we have to fund it, but yet they go out and they pick up a dog. Now the owner has issues. Now they got to go land at the Attorney General's office and they have to review this thing, and then they got to decide what they have to do. Then they got to go to before a judge, and then the judge is going to decide what they want to do. And many times we spend all this time and resources and dollars that we throw into this, and the judge ends up saying it's no violation or whatever they find, and then they're right back to where they were, and the dog goes right back, and the neighbor's screaming. So, I mean, there's way too many hands in this, and it's going to have a dedicated source of funding, and they have to have consistency.
Thank you.
Don't disagree. I guess it comes back to, if I hear the increase is based upon handling all cats, all problems with cats?
Rabid cats.
Just rabid cats. How many calls, because I'm hearing Mr. Wheatley with his situation, but how many calls for rabid cats?
We don't really document that right now because we haven't been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it would definitely, we answered a cats, 36 humans to cat bites, wildlife were 20 so far this year. So it's those are actual bites, because right now we will respond. If he was bitten, we would respond. So if we add just being attacked by that, the problem is that you have to have resources, so you would have to have people around the clock available to go and catch the cat and have the resources to catch the cat and then bring it back to, right now we use vet specialty if we have an emergency euthanasia, so we would take it there and have it euthanized.
You don't have a microwave?
No.
Oof. All right. Gonna have one final question, because we still have one other committee meeting today. Mr. Wheatley?
Yes. In response to all the money you're asking for, your animal control people are already on duty. Am I right?
Right.
So if it's 2:30 in the afternoon when I made that call, you already got people on duty. They're out there drinking coffee or whatever they're doing, chasing their tail. Why don't you dispatch it for emergency purposes only? Emergency. Dispatch it to that location, capture that animal, and take it to wherever you take it, and it don't cost any more. Then that officer's already getting paid for being on duty anyway. Or another example, have your Newcastle, and I hate to do this to the colonel, had a Newcastle County police respond with that little thing they carry on their hip and blow that thing out to oblivion. Because I was almost ready to do that, but I can't fire a weapon in a residential area. So, you know, and I found that cat 3 days ago under the shed that I told Deneret that don't respond because it's a feral cat, it's not a wild animal. Well, explain to me in Webster Dictionary what feral means. Thank you.
That's fine. And what we're going to do is kind of bring the discussion to a close this afternoon.
And real quick, okay. If other domestic animals have lunch on that animal then becomes infected as well. So now you not only got one rabid animal, you've got 10 or 12 out there having dinner on this thing.
Okay.
That's going to spread it now. Now you wound up with the epidemic. So, yeah, right. And I had the statistics from Delaware Disease Control. I had the statistics from the federal control out of Atlanta, Georgia on this subject. Unfortunately, I don't have enough money to print them out to pass them around.
Mr. Wheatley, want to thank you very much. We have some other public
comments.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
Real quick,
sorry.
Few comments. Yeah. I just want to say I've never seen the Delaware Animal Control truck sitting in a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts. Every time I've seen them, they've been on the road, and they've got four-legged passengers on the board, and they're doing their job. Okay, so I haven't seen them out there sitting there. Secondly, the last thing I want to have to do to explain to my constituents is that they couldn't get a police officer when they were robbed because they were out picking up boo-boo kitty some damn place.
I agree with that.
So I don't want the police into that. Second, we got into this either last year or the year before, because when the children, and I use the term lately, set the cat on fire in North Wilmington, that's when the state legislature did legislation that declared the cats domestic, because before that they were not, and you could have gotten Deneret to come out. So,
Councilman Weiner, flip that back. Back to some public comment, and then we'll hopefully bring this meeting to an end.
Right, I'm just going to make an obvious statement. The public will figure out real quickly that when they call, it's an emergency. When everyone else calls, it's not.
It's not.
We either pay for it or we don't pay for it.
Thank you, Councilman. Public comment. Yes, ma'am. Please stand and identify yourself if you would. Appreciate you being here.
Hi, my name is Nancy Horace-Sher. I live in Hocaston, Delaware. Mr. Usselton knows me pretty well by name now. He even posted my picture on his Facebook page. So I want to thank you for picking a good picture of me.
You're welcome.
I brought some comments. Address temperament tests in dogs because it is controversial. Kent County SPCA conducts temperament tests on dogs. A Newcastle County government audit of its contract with Kent County SPCA released this spring revealed that the rate of euthanasia procedures on dogs due to aggression have dramatically increased in the last year. In the first quarter of 2012, it was only 14%. Then it skyrocketed to 41% in the second quarter, 62% in the third quarter, 67% in the fourth quarter of 2012. well, and it maintains that level. Family pets have been deemed aggressive by Kent County SPCA after failing the temperament test.
No, in fact, if you'd like to, slide over like one sheet, and then if you
I can come back at the end of the table.
However, animal temperament tests were never designed to be used as a tool for deciding to euthanize an animal. Sue Sternberg's Assess-A-Pet and Emily Weiss's Safer Assessment, two widely used assessments nationwide in shelters, were designed to evaluate shelter dog behavior for better adoption outcomes. The ASPCAPro.org website states, "The scores in SAFER are not set up as pass-fail, but instead are meant to help shelters decide what resources are needed to support each dog towards a positive live outcome. The reality is that most open intake shelters, like Kent County SPCA, don't budget for the hiring of animal behaviorists to develop training or behavior modification for the animals in their charge. Euthanizing is much cheaper.
Is it?
And staff members who are not trained animal behaviorists conduct the temperament tests. Even when done expertly, the tests measure an animal's behavior not in a normal environment, but under the stressful conditions of a shelter, which may not be a true measure of the animal's potential as a pet. It's also important to note that no temperament test has been scientifically proven to be a fail-safe way to prevent placing aggressive dogs into homes. Some aggressive dogs pass temperament tests and aggress later on. They have mixed results, is my point. The passing of the state's shelter standards law requires that animals be held for 72 hours, are given vaccinations and a basic vet exam upon intake, and that all possible means of getting the animals out of the shelter, that is adoption, transferring to other shelters or rescue groups, or doubling animals in the available space, be exhausted before euthanizing animals for lack of space at the shelter. This law makes sense, and if those steps weren't being taken before the law passed, it's understood that there is a cost associated with this very basic care. And I think that's always the argument, that it costs money. We all know that. But it's very basic and it makes sense. Labeling animals aggressive is the loophole that Kent County SPCA uses, as shown by their statistics that I already mentioned, to fast track animals to death row. The law, however, makes a clear distinction between aggressive dogs and the dogs that Kent County SPCA say have failed its temperament test, such as Neo, killed there in 2011, Maggie, killed there in 2012, Lady, rescued this spring, and Miller, a puppy, also rescued this spring. And I want to note that the temperament tests aren't meant for dogs under 18 months of age. I ask that Newcastle County government also make this distinction very clear in its 2014 dog control contract and disallow temperament tests as a means to kill dogs.
Any questions from council? Okay, hearing no questions, we thank you for coming before council this afternoon with your information. We do have representatives, our administration, our law department, who work on the contract with the SPCA. And, you know, we have record of what was said today before council, and we will see that that document and those, your testimony, gets sent to the administration, to our law department.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you. Yes, ma'am. No problem. Now, let me call on Councilman Weiner here. Councilman Weiner?
Yes. I would just like to ask the SPCA if they could price that in as well. Obviously, if we want the service, we have to be willing to pay for it. We need to know what the number is.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Also, like naming toenail clipping and teeth capping.
And that too.
And you start working on him.
Pretty old me.
Okay. I also
have some questions for counsel.
Point of information. Point of information, if you should identify yourself for the record.
Yes,
my
please.
My name is Sandy Sobel. Is that all you need?
That's fine.
Timothy Sheldon is my representative.
Uh-huh.
My main concern is that Newcastle County did an audit of Kent County SPCA. I know it's a hard job and it's a thankful list and everything, but at the same time, they should be held to certain standards. Then, hey, I don't, you know, pay me more and you'll get better service, is basically what I gathered from Mr.
Eslington,
sorry. Which I think, you know, we're spending hard-earned money that what they request or what they bid on. We sent out a request for a bid. They gave us what they were willing to do. To claim hardship, they should not have bid if they were at the point that pay us more, we'll do a better job. The audit had questions regarding procedures within Kent County SPCA. I did a Freedom of Information Act to the law department and received a couple of visits that were done to Kent County SPCA after the audit that the person Major Matt Jamison went there on May 6th to the shelter, and he had concerns in his report about he put in there, after the interview with Kent County SPCA, I believe that the records of dog euthanized from Newcastle County need to be looked at. The animal control unit needs to be looked at. The stay of dogs at Rainbow Kennels needs to be looked at. It is the medical treatments done in a timely fashion. Are the dogs treated at Rainbow Kennels? We need to hold them also accountable. They're taking our money. He put his bid in. He said, hey, for this amount of money, I'm going to come out and get your dogs. I'm going to pick up stray dogs. My dog may get out the door, run out. It gets picked up by Kent County SPCA. I want to know it's going to be okay until I can come and get it. And as representatives of Newcastle County, I understand I would love the state to get the contract, you know, take care of it, you know, for funding. But at the same time, this gentleman, this agency, gave you a bid of what they were going to do, and we also need to hold them accountable for that bid and make sure they follow the procedures. That in two separate reports from two different people, have the same concerns. Thank you.
I thank you very much. And the only thing I'll leave you with is the fact that the information was given to us this afternoon. Once again, we will approach our administration, public safety department, and our law department to get an update on those inspections and what their findings were and what their recommendations are as far as any changes in the contract. So, but we thank you for your testimony. Okay, anything to be, that's Delaware Animal Control update. Anything under other? Hearing nothing under other. Any further public comment?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion second. Made and second adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Not voted.
Next meeting in 5 minutes. Executive in 5 minutes.
Okay, I gotta go get my shot.
Are you ready for
I'm ready for it.